Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us at this time every Thursday, and we appreciate same. Rafi, welcome to the show, and Happy New Year.
Hey, same to you, Neil. Glad to be back.
So a lot has happened since the last time you and I were on air. A lot going on relative to the terror attack in the early morning hours of New Year's Day on Bourbon Street. This has moved fairly quick, Rafi, and we've now kind of entered this phase of this where national media and others are calling for the resignation of Chief Ann Kirkpatrick. Your thoughts about what went on and where we are at this point in time?
No, I mean, you know, the trajectory of what's happening is quite common with events like a terrorist attack. So the terrorist is dead, and now, you know, people in the media, at least on the national scene, are looking to assign blame. And the target that they picked out for some of the blame is Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick. And truth be told, I mean, I think she is one of the best things that's happened to the city of New Orleans from a public safety perspective in years. So under her leadership, we've seen crime continue to go down. We've seen the morale of police officers improving. We're seeing new levels of accountability. We're very close to substantial compliance with the consent decree. So the events of what happened on January 1st is a tragedy, and it is a gut punch to everybody in this city and to the entire country, because everyone recognizes what happened in New Orleans could happen anywhere. And I, and I'm sure a lot of other people, thought that, you know, what happened in New Orleans on January 1st happens other places, but never here. But, you know, I've learned a hard lesson. The city's learned a hard lesson. But the blame that's been assigned to Ann Kirkpatrick is, I think, unjust and ill-informed. And the no one wants, you know, a terrorist attack. No one wants what happened in New Orleans on January the 1st. But to try and assign fault to Ann Kirkpatrick is, I think, an injustice, both to her personally, but more importantly, I think, to the men and women of the police department, because she's the leader of that organization. And we know that the men and women of the police department, as well as their partners with the Louisiana State Police and everyone else that was on duty on January the 1st, and there were countless other agencies that were helping the city of New Orleans try and secure and have a safe New Year, that Ann Kirkpatrick and the police department was not at fault because the city failed to have the bollards operational. The bollards were installed by the city, and they had been under repair for quite some time. They have been non-functional. No one knows for how long. Maybe we'll find out when the city council conducts their review of the bollard system. But we had three levels of barricades. We had the bollards, which apparently were non-operational. The city agreed to start the repair work in September. That was delayed until November, with the plan and hope of having them operational by the Super Bowl. That didn't do us any good for New Year's Eve or New Year's Day when that event happened. Another area of barricades or level of barricades were the wedges. These are devices that are deployed in the streets that are battery driven, and they essentially use hydraulic fluid to create a ramp that blocks vehicles from traveling down the street. I'm told that many of those wedges were non-operational, not because of the fault of the police department, not because of Ann Kirkpatrick failure as superintendent, but because the city did not maintain them. So when hydraulic fluid was poured into the tank to lift the ramp on that wedge device, the fluids were leaking out and rendered those devices useless. So that'll be something else that the city council will look into. And then the third level of barricades or barriers were the Archer barricades. Those are the 700-pound devices that were purchased by the city in 2017 and were supposed to be used in conjunction with the bollards to supplement the bollard system. And apparently, and we don't know for how long, those units were kept in storage. And Ann Kirkpatrick did not know about the bollards until the day after, when the city was reopening Bourbon Street. And some of those Archer barricades were taken out of storage and deployed on Bourbon Street. So she's been here a year. And when she came here, her mission was to make this city a safer place for all of the residents, to move the police department to compliance with the consent decree. And she's done everything in her power and exceeded the expectations, I think, of many people, including myself, in her short tenure here. But to try and blame her for what happened on January the 1st is unfair to her, and really, I think, unfair to the people of New Orleans, because I think the people of New Orleans recognize how much better this city is, how much safer this city is, in large part because of her leadership.
Department of Public Works Director Hathaway yesterday during the Joint Public Works and Security Committee meeting said that Homeland Security manages these security assets and that DPW does not maintain the assets, that it's actually Homeland Security that does so. But we hadn't heard squat from Homeland Security. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of intrigued by that.
Well, I don't think we're going to, you know, I noticed that the city council at their hearing yesterday noted that Homeland Security did not appear at that. The superintendent appeared at that meeting, but not Homeland Security. So the city council's investigation, they have subpoena power, and they may have to use subpoena power to get the city agency of Homeland Security to come to answer questions about what they've done to maintain those security devices that were purchased by the city, who knows how long ago, and why they weren't operational on New Year's Day.
Well, and none of this really surprises me, and I don't think it surprises you either. I mean, you know, I think you've seen the motor pool operation of the city and how they maintain their vehicles. It's pretty shoddy at best, always has been. A lot hasn't changed. I mean, in the aftermath of Katrina, I was repairing NOPD vehicles at our motor pool. I mean, that's how bad it got, because they weren't prepared for much of anything. You know, you look at the maintenance of the playgrounds, that's run amok. You look at
the conditions of the streets. Yeah.
The streets, yeah. You know, their office buildings, elevators within their office buildings. I mean, it seems like no one's paying attention. Got a lot of press conferences, right? A lot of political sound bites about buying this and getting this and getting this money from the federal government to get this and get that. And we ultimately get it in some cases. Some cases we drop the ball, we don't get it. But we got to maintain it. You can buy all the great toys in the world. If you don't maintain them, they're not worth, they're worth nothing. They're useless. I mean, you know.
Yes.
So for me, I mean, it's really about the execution and about who's going to pay attention to, you know, something working and who's going to fix it. Because it's got to get fixed right away, because you got the next best, greatest convention coming in town the following weekend, right? Or you got French Quarter Fest or this or that. I mean, there's always something going on in the city. We pride ourselves in that fact. But not so much when it comes to the maintenance of equipment that we need in order to make sure that we're not relying on the heroic efforts of members of the NOPD and a man lift that was unpermitted that happened to be left in the middle of Bourbon Street. And
right.
And I know that's kind of cold to say that, but my God, I mean, if the man lift wouldn't have been there, we probably would have NOPD officers that would have been more seriously injured than not.
Well, I mean, everyone has seen the video of the group of officers quickly responding when a call came in and moving towards the crime scene on New Year's morning. And, you know, three officers immediately engaged the terrorist. And had they not been there to engage that terrorist, I hate to think what may have happened, because while he crashed his vehicle, you know, he had firearms, he had a handgun, he had a long rifle, told he was wearing body armor, and make no mistakes about it, he was on a suicide mission. His mission was to kill as many people as he could in this incident. So the fact that his car was disabled would not have deterred him from opening fire. And if the police weren't there to engage in fire with this guy, he would have turned his weapons on more unsuspecting, unarmed victims in the quarter. And the carnage, as horrible as it was, could have been much, much worse were it not for the police department. That it was there responding because of the leadership of Ann Kirkpatrick.
Let me ask you, and this is not a criticism of this organization, but it was announced yesterday that the chief is going to hire Bill Bratton as the expert to help in their review of the measures deployed, and I guess he's going to look at, you know, the manner in which we deploy them and who's responsible or whatever. I'm not exactly certain. But why wouldn't the city engage them, and why would a third party, the New Orleans Police and Justice Foundation, do it? I mean, I know, you know, they want to help, they have the finances, but I mean, I think we're already starting off on a bad foot, and that's not criticism of the Police and Justice Foundation, but if you're not invested in this yourself as the city and, you know, and funding this and bringing to bear these resources to remedy this, I'm a little confused and mystified by why we want to take this approach.
Okay, so this is my opinion, and it's just my opinion. But if, you're right. I think the city should, pay for this type of thing. But to wait for the city to, do a request for proposals and hire somebody, we're talking weeks at best, months more likely before that happens. What's happened in the wake of January 1st is the mayor secured a SEER 1 threat rating for Mardi Gras. And, Mardi Gras is weeks away from happening. SEER 1 is the highest level of threat ratings, and it triggers certain responsibilities. SEER 1 threat levels are made for venues in small-scale events, mm-hmm. not a five-mile parade route that we enjoy. So, when you're talking about trying to secure a football stadium or a park for a festival, you're talking about not allowing people to bring ice chests, into those types of venues. With a SEER 1 rating for Mardi Gras, are people going to be able to bring ice chests to the parade routes? When you're talking about securing the perimeter around the Superdome for the Super Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, you're talking about a limited footprint. But when you're talking about a five-mile parade route where you have to block off, if you're going to have to deploy archer barricades and wedge barriers and deploy big trucks to block intersections and whatnot, and you're going to need more officers to do it. Keep in mind that those parade routes are city thoroughfares, and they're operational until an hour or two before the parades, and they have to be opened up an hour after the parades pass. So when you start deploying all of that for a SEER 1 event, I don't know how any jurisdiction could pull something like that off. So New Orleans is on the clock, and the superintendent is trying to plow through and figure out what needs to be done so that she can make informed decisions, because these don't happen overnight. You need to plan for this, and you can't wait for the procurement process for government to free up the money to do this. So I applaud the Police and Justice Foundation for stepping in and doing this. In a perfect world, it should be, and maybe the city might choose to reimburse the Police and Justice Foundation that's raising money from the private sector. But I think that, the responsible thing to do is to, how do we prepare, for the events that are coming up, the Super Bowl? How do we get Bourbon Street and the French Quarter hardened and what's involved in that? And I think, what do we do for Mardi Gras that's literally right around the corner?
Yeah, we'll continue this conversation, because I'm not so sure that this SEER 1 threat level, I had this conversation with Council Member J.P. Morrell the other day, and what people are describing and what the federal government's going to be willing to do in this type of the environment, as you point out, a 5 to 6 mile parade route with over a million people on the parade route, I'm not... If they view this like they view locking down the Rose Bowl, we're not going to have Mardi Gras. That ain't going to happen. Because no city's going to have the assets and resources to do what's done, whether it's a Rose Bowl, a Super Bowl, a Sugar Bowl, or otherwise. I mean, it's just you cannot finance and reach that level of threat protection. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goinecci, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Fresh Atlantic salmon portions, 7 ounce farm raised, including marinated portions, just $5.99 each. Delicious Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5, or just $1.25 each. This week's digital deal is the delicious Sumo Citrus, $2.47 per pound, limit 4 pounds. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Whether you want to,
bye, bye, bye,
in a bear market... or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Raphael Goinecci, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Raffi, I just wanted to say again, I didn't mean any criticism of the New Orleans Police and Justice Foundation, because it's a group of volunteers. Actually, it's a not-for-profit. They go out, solicit funds to in order to assist. There's a lot that was accomplished for law enforcement as a result of their efforts, so I would never do so. I just think it just at some point we need to take responsibility for ourselves. And, you know, this...
I agree.
You know, and I just, it's just kind of disheartening. And then we got all the issues about whether or not it's a public document, transparency, who gets to see what, when, why, and how. Yesterday, unfortunately, we had a lot of finger pointing going on at that Criminal Justice Committee meeting relative to the chief talking to the council chair as opposed to talking to the committee chair of criminal justice. You know, the whole backdrop, and you know this better than most, is we've got 2025 elections as the backdrop. There's posturing going on in every which way but loose. It's a little disheartening, you know, and probably all the more reason why New Orleans and Police and Justice Foundation ought to pay for it. But here we go again, you know, and it's just, I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. I mean, just, I'm done.
Everybody is sick of that. You know, we're sick of what happened on the first. We're sick of the crime that we've had in this community. And, you know, unfortunately, I think for too many years and too often, and we see this in cycles where, you know, a new administration comes in and they're committed to rebuilding the police department only to declare victory. And once they declare victory, it means essentially the game is over. And, you know, they move on to the next thing, and that begins the gradual decline of all of the improvements and changes that were made. We've seen that cycle. I've seen that cycle play out for the better part of four decades now. And, you know, with Anchor, Patrick, she's here, and she's trying to move this department into compliance with the consent decree. She's trying to maintain the advances that have been made here. You know, the crime statistics basically demonstrate the success of the police department under her leadership. So, you know, we're talking about CR1 events and what that means. Nobody knows what that means for a parade route. She's the superintendent, is going to be in charge of Mardi Gras in about 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. She better figure out what CR1 needs, and she doesn't have the luxury of waiting for the procurement process to engage experts to come in and tell them this. I mean, Mardi Gras is the greatest free show on earth. And, you know, you ended just before the last commercial. You started talking about, you know, no one can afford the security that would be involved in a CR1 event. I agree with you completely. I mean,
if we treat a parade as a building, as you so articulately pointed out, I mean, you know, you have been involved. I've been involved in that process with both the NFL and the federal authorities many times. It ain't going to work for Mardi Gras. I can tell you right now.
Yep. Yep. I mean, parades are inherently soft targets. Mm-hmm. And you cannot make them hard targets. You can, you know, do some things that will come at great cost, but you're never going to be eliminate some of the inherent threats with, you know, a parade spanning a 5 mile to 6 mile parade route with, as you pointed out, over 1 million people attending those parades. So, I mean, I think Ann Kirkpatrick is using every resource she can, and the Police and Justice Foundation stepped up and said, we'll try and help. And, you know, they're going to have to raise money from the people that, you know, are philanthropically involved and want this city to be
safe.
Unfortunately,
they've stepped up dozens of times. So, I mean, you know,
And we're, and it's going to be very the same fortunate people over and over and over again
for that, you know, right. But I've, you know, part of the problem I have is this kind of beggar mentality of the city. You know, I feel like we're always shaking cans at the corner, right? And, you know, we're looking to the federal government, we're looking to state government, we're looking everywhere, but internally and prioritizing the dollars that we have for the basic necessities that the city needs to deliver. And that's a culture thing, right? Once you develop that culture that you take the primary responsibility for funding and financing everything, and you treat it that way as opposed to going to other resources first, you know, you don't get good. You don't get efficient. You're not managing your equipment. You know, it's interesting. I made this observation. We bought the International 4700 or 7400, whichever, it's either 4700, I think it's 4700 trucks in 2006. Those are the same trucks that were deployed to help NOPD in the aftermath of this event. In 2025, due to math. I mean, you know, we maintain those vehicles. We run them every week. We ride in them every week for at least an hour because we know that when called upon, if we have a rain event that causes flooding, we have to utilize those trucks. We never know what Mother Nature is going to deal us, and we never know what terrorists would deal us or any other challenge that call upon that asset. And that's how you have to treat all of these pieces of equipment. You never know when you're going to have to deploy them. And I just don't see that mindset at all. I don't know who's responsible, but I know one thing for sure. That mindset does not exist within the confines of city government today. And it hasn't, like you pointed out, in the four decades that you've been looking at this, you know, in these cycles, I think you would agree. Have you ever seen that mindset? I haven't.
Nope. So, you know, the mindset was that we needed these bollards and wedge devices and other security things in 2017. And here we are in 2025. And when we needed them, they weren't operational. They weren't deployed. They were in storage, you know. And, you know, I applaud the city council for doing this review to find out who's responsible and to fix it. Not so much to assign blame, but, you know, we purchase these assets for a reason, for security, and we need to examine, you know, why those assets weren't out there, why those safety devices weren't being maintained, and we need to make sure that going forward that they are there and they are used not to eliminate the potential for what happened on January the 1st, because you're never going to be able to totally eliminate it. You're only trying to mitigate and reduce the potential of those types of events happening in the future.
There was somebody in city government, I don't know who said it, Tommy Tucker brought it up this morning on his show about, you know, a comment made that these things are a pain in the ass to deploy. Yeah. It's easy to identify the problem. No one said that the solutions were easy. I mean, that goes with the territory, right? I mean, yeah. There's a lot of things you do in an organization that are a pain in the ass to do, but you got to do them because they're important. They're a priority. I mean, exactly. It's one of the most ignorant statements I've ever heard someone say. I mean, it's idiotic. That would come out, and I don't know exactly who said it, but I mean, it's like you got to be kidding me.
Right. And I heard that segment on Tommy's show this morning, and I heard his guest talk about the fact that with respect to those Archer barricades, and that's what they were referring to, were a pain to deploy because they're 700 pounds. The guest
for a
pointed
reason.
Out that their videos. Showing that those devices can be moved by, it looks like a little hand truck that, you know, basically is like anybody with one arm can move those devices around with this device, and apparently the city, that's part of the package. And when the city's deploying those now, they're using, you know, cranes and heavy vehicles to move these forklifts and things, to move these things around, when these little portable hand trucks that allow for one person with one arm to be able to position them into place. So that's, you know, it's one thing to have them, but if they had that equipment, why wasn't that being used? When was the last time those hand trucks were used to move those around? And, you know, those are the questions that we have that hopefully the city council can obtain answers to in the weeks and months ahead as they progress with this hearing.
And but, we know it can be done, right? Because when they institute a threat level in Washington, D.C., guess what? You got big Jersey barriers going up. You got water-filled Jersey barriers going up. You got fencing going up. You got all kinds of security measures. You've got those same devices that we have here in the city. They're deployed because if they don't get deployed, somebody's head's going to roll, right? And in the aftermath of a number of occurrences across this country in the Summer of Love and January 6th, guess what? They get deployed incredibly fast. They're not there at 8 p.m. and you wake up at 6 a.m. and guess where they are? The whole thing's up. It's magical, right? How that happens. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goinecci, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goinecci, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. You've heard me say many times they are really reliable in reporting out crime stats. And for the first time, we're getting to see the 2024 year-end crime stats that are released by the Metropolitan Crime Commission. And this is good news, Rafi.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would have liked to have been talking about this the entire hour instead of what happened on January the 1st. But, you know, we don't have that luxury. But, you know, we're talking in the context of Ann Kirkpatrick and what she was brought here to do and what she's accomplished. And I think these stats, I think, are a report card on how well the police department has done. And she'll be the first person to say that the police department didn't do it by themselves. A large part of this is because of the presence of the Louisiana State Police and the coordination and cooperation and partnership that exists there. But, you know, what New Orleans has accomplished under her leadership in the past year is remarkable. So we're seeing homicides decline 35% from 23 to 24. And the high water mark for homicides in the city were 2022, and we're down 49% this year versus that. And so how is that accomplished? Well, the first district, which includes the Bywater, Mid-City, and Treme area, they showed the largest reduction of a 75% decrease in homicides in the first district. The seventh district saw their raw numbers in homicides declined from 70 homicides in 2023 to 39 in 2024. In fact, there was a period of time in which there were almost 2 months without a homicide occurring in the 7th District from mid-August to early October. So those don't happen by accident. So part of the strategy in driving down homicides was with the assistance of the state police in the 7th District. And how did they do that? They did traffic enforcement. The traffic enforcement that they did, you know, they stopped made 200 traffic stops in a short period of time, but only issued a handful of tickets. Those traffic stops were the predication for the police to pull over a vehicle. And if it was just a minor traffic violation, the state police would let them go with a warning. But those traffic stops allowed the state police to identify people that they pulled over as wanted for other crimes of violence. enabled the state police to determine if there was illegal narcotics or an illegal firearm in the car, a felon in possession of a firearm. And they recovered a number of stolen cars and made felony arrests. It wasn't about issuing tickets. So that type of proactive policing strategy has been deployed all over the city, and we're seeing, you know, record reductions in homicides, non-fatal shootings, carjackings, and armed robbery. And then how do we continue to bring down the crime rate? Well, this year we've seen the inmate population go from 1,250 or so inmates in pretrial custody to nearly 1,550 inmates in pretrial custody. Now, we talked about some of those issues, but when you look and see what the offenders are in pretrial custody for, two-thirds of them are in pretrial custody for crimes of violence and felony weapons offenses. So the fact that those 1,500-plus people are in pretrial custody, part of the reason why crime continues to decline. So it's critically important that any crime that's committed be solved. And we're seeing in the 8th District, in the French Quarter area, their solve rate is 87%.
These numbers are staggering. These are staggering. I guarantee they hadn't had these in 30 years. I promise you. Right. I mean, you know, 85% solution rate of homicides, 97 on ag assaults, 85 simple robberies, 94 in purse snatchings, ag batteries, 88% solve rate, armed robberies, carjackings, 7, stabbings, 93%, shootings, 94%. Those numbers are huge. And that's what it's all about.
That's exactly right, because if those people aren't taken off the streets, they continue to prey upon the public and continue to drive up the crime rate. So the fact that the crime rate's going down is an indication that law enforcement is doing a better job of deterring and preventing crime by arresting the people that are perpetrating the crimes that are affecting public safety. So this is, again, another example of, you know, the leadership of Ann Kirkpatrick and clearing the path and supporting the men and women of the police department to fulfill their primary mission, which is to protect and serve the people of this city.
And, you know, crime rate's one thing, solution rate's something else. It's more of a direct line to what you're doing internally within your organization and how you're processing information. So that's why I say these numbers are huge. I mean, I felt this stuff being reported on the news, right, a crime occurring, and then them announcing an arrest within 48 hours. And the more of those you have, the more you want to clap and stand up and give them a standing ovation.
You know, another thing to keep in mind, you know, we're talking about the 8th District, and overall crime is up in the 8th District. But when you take a look at the 8th District, you recognize how unique the 8th District is. So, sure. Yes, they have a high solve rate, but they had more incidents of violent crimes this year than they had the previous year. But keep in mind that you've got 10 million people that come visit New Orleans, and a healthy percentage of them go to the French Quarter. When the police are arresting 87% of the offenders, they're finding out that the overwhelming majority of the people that they're arresting for serious felony offenses don't reside in the French Quarter. The French Quarter is the magnet for offenders that, you know, go to the French Quarter to party. And when they see an opportunity to prey upon the public, or they see an adversary in the French Quarter, that's a felony offense that occurs. And that felony offense is happening in the French Quarter. At least when the police in the French Quarter are arresting those offenders for crimes perpetrated in the 8th District, that means that their guns that are taken away from them, and in many instances, if they're arrested for a crime of violence, they don't return back to the 7th District, the 1st District, the 5th District. They're in pretrial custody, which makes their neighborhoods a safer place because they're off the streets. So that's why solve rates are so, so important. And the police department is still battling a manpower crisis. but they are being much more strategic. And by being strategic, they're being much more effective in reducing crime by using their available resources to the maximum extent that are being reflected in the numbers. This information is available on the Metropolitan Crime Commission's website. It's good news, as you pointed out. Go take a look at it, metrocrime.org. Anyone that wants to receive this information, there's no charge for it. Just give us your email address and we'll send it to you as we prepare these reports going forward.
And emblematic of this is the announcement that two more were arrested for the mass shooting on Iberville Street that occurred on November 21st of 2024. There are a number of individuals that have been identified, and the more that they can lock down on these individuals, the better off we are.
Right. So they were quickly identified. It took them some time to find them. And, of course, you know, my favorite agency, the U.S. Marshals, are the people that found these guys.
Yep.
And brought them, you know, back here. But, you know, they've been removed from the streets, and they've been in hiding since they committed that. But you can't hide for too long from the U.S. Marshals Service because they always get their man. And they took them off the streets. And, again, this is another example of the solve rate in the 8th District. So police department is firing off on all cylinders right now because of Ann Kirkpatrick and because of the Louisiana State Police that are doing remarkable things to assist the city and the police department. And that's something that, you know, should not go unnoticed. And if you want to see it and find out more about it, please go to our website, metrocrime.org, and take a look at this information.
Rafi, as always, thank you so much for all that y'all do at the Metro Crime Commission. And we really appreciate you joining us every Thursday at this hour to share that information. A lot of hard work goes into these reports, and you guys should be commended and keep up the great work in 2025.
Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. That's Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back and check in with Scoot. Stay with us. I want to give a shout-out to Dickie Brennan, who's this year's recipient of the Ella Brennan Lifetime Achievement Award in Hospitality. It'll be presented at a gala tonight at the Four Seasons Hotel, and this award was created by the New Orleans Wine and Food Experience back in 2010. Dickie runs his own company called Dickie Brennan and Company. They employ over 600 people with 7 local restaurants. Congratulations to Dickie Brennan, good friend. Scoot's up next. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Hey, that man makes a mean steak.
Oh, yeah. That he does.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk about these fires in Los Angeles. And what's really kind of unknown is information about how they actually started. And I promise that when I was recently in L.A. just, you know, a week or so ago, I did not do any campfires, didn't do any matches, didn't do anything like that. So it's not me. But how did they start? I understand that they spread because of really a dry atmosphere and high, high winds up to 100 miles an hour. But how are they starting? We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, more talk about Canada possibly becoming the 51st state. And we've got a lot to get to this afternoon. And we'll take all of your calls at 504-260-1870.
Scoot's up next. Stay tuned with the great lineup. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Thursday evening. We'll see you guys again in the morning.